in relation to Koch Root, you've got God giving Noah and people the
the clean and unclean animals.
Clean and unclean.
And, I'm going to get to that.
Okay, all right.
I'm going to get to that too soon.
Okay.
Now, okay, so let me get back to this point. The point is that with regard to the keeping the kashrut, the main idea of the kashrut is, as the verse says in Leviticus, to differentiate. Differentiation means intellect. For instance, in the when we say Havdalah, now, I don't know if you know, that means after the Sabbath, there is a certain blessing, they say, to differentiate between Sabbath and the rest of the week. Now, in the prayers, in the 18 prayers, we place it in the very first blessing, after the first three. As you remember, there's three, and then we start the requests. The first request is for knowledge, and in there, we mention the fact that the Sabbath is leaving, and now we differentiate between the Sabbath and between the rest of the week. Why? Because knowledge and differentiation is one. As I mentioned last week, that knowledge all begins with differentiation, classification. That's why Adam was classifying the various animals. He was differentiating. That's how science begins, by noticing differences. Now, the Torah is telling you here that to keep kosher is not, this is really where the secret of kashrut. If people would look into the Bible, into the Torah properly, they'd see it's right there, to differentiate. Now, to differentiate means, and this, I want you to listen carefully to this idea. See, most people have the idea of self-control. Now, self-control is not really, in the eyes of the Torah, the ultimate idea. I'll explain to you why. See, self-control means when you have one emotion against another. For instance, a person wants to look good, so he doesn't want to overeat, he wants to diet. That we call self-control. But you have to understand that in that case, the person is just going for one form of personal desire over another. His vanity is telling him to diet, and his desire, his appetitive desire, wants to eat. So he's in conflict. That's what we call self-control, a person that could control one desire with another desire. This is not really what kashrut is. Kashrut isn't really a study in self-control. It's something more. It really is to raise a person to a higher level where he does things because of the supremacy of the mind. That's a different kind of a concept. That's a bit higher than the modern-day idea of self-control. The Torah's ideas, as usual, are on a little higher philosophical level than the masses of people. And when the Torah talks about self-control, it means not just controlling one emotion because of another one. There you really didn't go too far. You're basically involved in your instinctual emotions, just one instinct over another. But over here what the Torah is telling you is that you should recognize the area of the mind, that thought, to differentiate, to study the laws of kashrut, to understand them. And then when you abide by them, it's not because you're just controlling yourself, it's because you're recognizing that the world of ideas, of Torah, has a supremacy over the world of the instinctual. That's a whole philosophy. That's a whole way of life. That's a commitment to a certain sphere of reality, the world of Torah ideas. It's not just self-control. There's a big difference between self-control and what the Torah calls the being holy. See, being holy isn't just controlling oneself. It's much more. It means the recognition of the world of ideas, the differentiation, the understanding, knowledge. That's how kashrut is a positive commandment as well. Now, as you know, a ben Noach can do any positive commandment. So in the Torah. So Ben Noach can keep kashrut, but he should make sure when he does it that he has the proper notion, the proper idea. It's not because the pig is a bad animal or he's dirty or trichinosis or anything like that. It's because if you want to do it properly, then you have to understand gain some knowledge of the kosher and non-kosher. And the concept of kashrut should be understood as a commitment to the sphere of the ideas, God's ideas of halacha and Torah. Then the person is raised to a higher level and he lives a higher kind of existence. That's why the Torah mentions the holiness over here. Okay. Now it's interesting to note that the commandment of not cooking the goat in its the kid in the milk of its mother is mentioned again in the area that we are doing in Deuteronomy 14, right at the end, where it says, and we're going to come back to this verse, because, by the way, this verse has very much to do with the Ben Noach, with the Ger Toshav. That's Deuteronomy 14:21, where it says you shouldn't eat any animal that died of itself, and then it says you should give it to the Ger. This is the Ger Toshav, the stranger. And then it says, and he should eat it, or you should sell it to the to a Gentile. That's not a Ger Toshav. Why? Because you're a holy nation to God your God. You should not cook a kid in the milk of its mother. This is one place where you have the idea of not cooking the goat in the mother's milk. And there's another place where you have it. Actually, it's the same verse twice. It's in Exodus. If you take a look at Exodus... Exodus 23:19, and the same exact verse is repeated again in Exodus 34:26. Okay, now just hold that for a moment. I'll get right back to this point. There's one point that I want to mention first, and that is that. I just want to show you that when the Torah mentions it in different places, it's different concepts. It's not just accidentally. It didn't have to fall there. There's a reason why one is in Exodus and why another one is in Deuteronomy. Okay? Now, in Deuteronomy, the reason why it's there is because it's coming under the law of supremacy of the soul, of the divine part of man, as we mentioned before. And the reason is because there are two times that you have to exercise the supremacy. One is with regard to things that you can never eat, as I mentioned last week, that a person shouldn't have a fantasy that something is great that he could never have. He has to overcome that. The other thing is, it is very difficult many times for people to exercise even self-control in areas where they're constantly involved. I'll give you an example. Hypnosis, for instance, works for smokers. It does not work for overeaters. And the reason is very simple, because a smoker can get hypnotized and he never has to smoke again. Since he never has to go near it, that's it. He's finished with it. There are people, as you know, that can't drink. If they take one drink, that's it. They could never drink. Once they take one, they're gone. With regard to things, they, in that sense, it's easier for them never to touch it than to come in contact with it and be able to abstain. That they can't do. So the Torah recognizes that in man there are two difficult things when it comes to his desires. One is to give up something and say, I'll never have that. That is one kind of emotional pain. One kind of fantasy that's difficult to give up. The other kind is to have something around, commonly around, and then at certain times you must abstain. That's even more difficult for some people. For some people, one thing's difficult. For another, other people, the other one might even be more difficult. But the point is that there are two types of exercising of the supremacy of the mind over the emotion, you see. And that's why the Torah places that verse in Deuteronomy 14:21. Because what it's telling you is that there is another kind of supremacy of the mind, and that is with regard to things that are commonly eaten. You always eat the goat, and you always drink the milk, but the combination is prohibited. So they have a prohibition about something that is permissible. You have to restrict it in a certain way. So you have two types of restrictions in this chapter. One type is a total restriction, and the other type is restriction of a thing that you have commonly with you, but under certain circumstances, you cannot have it. You can't have that the cheeseburger. You can't have the cooking the meat and the milk together. Now, the reason why Torah mentions it also in Exodus is because this violation, I'll explain to you something which I assume must be bothering you, and that is, you're all familiar with the fact that we can't, religious Jew cannot eat meat and milk together. Now, the question is, the Bible doesn't really say that. The Bible just says you should not cook a kid in the milk of its mother. So if we just took it literally, we would say that it's a specific animal, a specific mother, of a you're not allowed to take that mother's milk and then use that to cook the child, the baby goat. But we, you know very well that it has nothing to do with that in halacha. In halacha, really, it's any kind of meat and milk, any mammal, actually. You're not allowed to take the milk of the mammal and cook it and use it together in a way that it's cooked, according to the Torah law. Not just a kid in the milk of its mother. I'll explain to you why the Torah speaks only in terms of the kid in its mother's milk. And that is, if you take a look at Exodus, you'll see that this chapter is right after the... the incident of the golden calf. That's Exodus 34:26, and it's repeated from before, from Exodus. It's Exodus 20. Oh, here it is. It's Exodus 23:19. Okay? Now, the reason is like this. If you take a look at that verse, it says that the first fruits you should bring to the house of God your God. And then it says you shouldn't cook a kid in its mother's milk. What's the connection between the two? Now, you know very well that the primitive people always had these fertility rites, and the first fruits for them was a big source of ceremonies with regard to fertility rites. Now, the Torah, as you know, is essentially its purpose is to wipe out idolatry in every form. So what the Torah says is that when you have that emotion about first fruits, you shouldn't do any primitive rites with these fruits. You should bring them to the house of God your God. It means bring them to the temple, and There's a whole halachic process. It's explained in Deuteronomy, where you place it and to express your thanks to God, and to use that emotion in the proper way, to express it properly. And as I said in Torah, the worst emotion is misguided religious emotion. So the Torah here is trying to move man from an idolatrous kind of emotion and instead direct toward the true idea of God. And that's why it says you shouldn't cook the the kid in its mother's milk. Because there was an idolatrous practice that Maimonides mentions it, where they used to take the goat and they'd cook it in the milk of its mother, thinking that this is some kind of a mystical powers will be here, because this is the very thing that nurtures the child, and they're cooking it in it. So they had these kind of concepts. I mean, I know it sounds strange to us, but these primitive concepts exist even today in a little more distorted form. But in the old days, they had these various kind of idolatrous practices. So the Torah, as a matter of fact, somebody told me recently that it was discovered that Maimonides' statement is correct, was discovered very recently through a certain archaeological discovery, that there was such a practice, in fact. And because Maimonides deduced from the Torah itself, he really didn't see it anywhere. But somebody recently corroborated this. I believe it was in the New York Times. I don't remember offhand right now. But the point is, at any rate, the point is that that's the reason why the Torah mentions that you shouldn't cook the kid in its mother's milk. Because originally, that was an idolatrous practice. Now, you have to realize that the Torah speaks in two frameworks. The Torah speaks in the philosophic framework, and that is the overt Torah. But then the halacha is something which has a specific form to it, and that is different than the Torah itself. Now, let me before I know it sounds strange, let me explain it to you a little further before it's misunderstood. Let's say, take a look for instance in Leviticus 19:27. Okay, so there it states clearly that you're not permitted to destroy the, which means with a razor basically, the side of your head, and also to shave with a razor on your beard. Okay, That's Leviticus 19:27. Now take a look at Leviticus 21:5. Now here it's speaking about the priests, okay? So it says over here that they shouldn't, they're not permitted to mutilate themselves by making cuts in their head. And then again it says, and they're not permitted to shave their faces. Okay? Now this was already stated previously with regard to all of Israel, not just with regard to the priests. So why does it say over here that the priests can't do it? It would seem that that an average Jew would be able to do it, but that is not the case. Now the Talmud explains why you have it in both places, that it teaches you a specific halacha. There's an additional halacha to be derived there. I'm not going to go into that detail because it's not important for my point. But what I'm trying to share is like this, that the reason why the Torah, that the priest should not do it, is because the Torah is speaking in a philosophical vein as well. And the Torah is saying that these priests have to be holy. If you take a look, it says in verse 6, these priests should be holy to their God, and they shouldn't desecrate the name of their God. Because the priests of the other nations used to do all these things. They used to mutilate their bodies, and they used to shave their heads in a certain way. So therefore, what the Torah is telling you is that kind of a practice would be the highest desecration for the people of Israel if they would get involved in that kind of a practice. So that's why the Torah overtly speaks about the priests, even though it is a practice which is prohibited for every Ben Israel as well. Because the Torah wants to point out that the worst tragedy is not only if the Ben Israel does it, the priests do it, then the whole sanctity of the priesthood is lost. So that is on a philosophical plane. The Torah speaks overtly on a philosophical plane. The halacha is something which is derived through the specific methods of derivation from the Torah. The halacha, of course, doesn't differentiate between the priest and between the average person. But the Torah speaks in the framework of the, in a philosophical framework. That's the same thing with regard to the, cooking the goat in its mother's milk. The Torah mentions the original idolatrous practice to indicate that is really the most horrible violation if a person did it in that form. But halachically, it didn't stick to the case of the kid in its mother's milk, but rather any mammal in its mother's milk is halachically prohibited. Now, the reason why that is so is very simple. This prohibition comes under two categories. One category is the prohibition of idolatry, and that is from, and that's the two times that it's mentioned in Exodus. Those are both idolatry, because it's the exact same verse, and it's repeated again after the incident of the golden calf, because that's when they fell to idolatry, because they practiced the worship of the golden calf. So it was repeated again. In Deuteronomy, it comes under another category. There comes under the category of a person exercising control over his instincts. So this law, this one law, which is mentioned three times in the Torah, comes under two headings. One is idolatry, and the other one is the practice of self-control, exercising control, more than self-control, as I explained before, exercising the supremacy of the part of man that partakes of wisdom over the instinctual part. So that's why it's not just the kid in the mother's milk, but rather it's the any mammal, you see, in the milk of its, and any mammal with milk would be the prohibition. The halacha is not always commensurate with the philosophy. The halacha has its own structure. Over here, you could see how the structure is more appropriate for the second category than for the first. And it does no harm to the first one as well, because it includes the first, but it's even more inclusive. And the fact that it's more inclusive is an important factor insofar as exercising control, because then the control is exercised to a far greater degree. It'd be very easy for a person to control himself from eating a specific goat with the milk of its mother. I mean, that'd be a pretty easy thing to do. But with regard to a constant control, exercise of control, there it makes sense to prohibit the combination of meat and milk at all times. So that's why the halachic category is greater than the philosophic category. Okay? That's in this case, you could see why it would have to be greater for the second aspect. Sometimes it has to be greater just because of the way halacha is structured. And for that, you really have to study, as I said, the science of halachic structure, because halacha is a specific science that has its own rules and its own system. And certain things are possible within the system, certain things are not possible. You can't just do anything in halacha. Sometimes, in order to have halacha, you require a very specific kind of structure. So that is also the case many times, where the Torah will speak philosophically, but when you use the methods of derivation of the oral law, you'll see that it's not, it's within keeping of the written word, but it could be broader than the written word because of the way halacha is framed. This is just something I want to bring to your attention. I know that it may sound very abstract, but I think most of you probably grasp what I'm trying to say, even though I'm not giving you specific instances. But that's the basic. That's an important concept in understanding how to decipher, how to interpret the words of the Torah. So here you have these two categories where the same violation comes under. Now, that's basically the reason for the for kashrus. But there is one more point over here which is important as well. You see, and that is that if you look at kashrus in Leviticus, because kashrus is in two places. Kashrus is in Leviticus and it's also in Deuteronomy. Now, if you take a look at Kashrus and Leviticus, the rabbis, the scholars of the oral law, are sensitive to something at the end of the at the end of the chapter. You see, if you take a look at the end of the chapter, you'll see it says that you shouldn't eat, for instance, in 1141, you shouldn't eat the creeping things and anything that goes on its stomach, anything that creeps, you shouldn't eat because they are an abomination. Now, and you shouldn't make your life an abomination with everything that creeps. Now, that's in 43, okay? Now, and it's repeated again, and take a look at 44 again. You should become holy, and you shouldn't make yourself unclean with all the creeping animals, okay? So Rashi over here quotes the Talmud, which says that, and on verse 45, he says, because I am the God you God took you out of Egypt. So Rashi says, if God would not have taken the people of Israel out of Egypt for this, except for this one reason, it would be already worth it, which is that they don't make themselves unclean with the creeping animals. Okay, now I want to explain to you. Again, it's not that that God despises creeping animals. This is completely nonsensical. What it means is that there's something else in keeping kosher which we didn't mention, and that is, Maimonides mentions it in his guide, and that is that there were certain practices that primitive people would do. For instance, they would eat certain things which specifically because they're abominable, like insects or various things, and this is something that the Torah considers to be improper. A man to engage in eating things that are specifically disgusting to him because he feels that some kind of mystical benefit will be gained. That's like that's a type of idolatrous thinking. And that's why the Torah emphasizes that point in the that's why the Bible emphasizes that point in Leviticus 19 in those verses. Because there's another concept that God does not want man to eat things that are disgusting to him because of, specifically, the primitive people do it specifically, they feel because it's disgusting that there is something, some kind of special powers there that they're going to gain by doing that. And I know it sounds strange, but the primitive mind does think that way. And this is something which the Torah, again, is against, and that's why the rabbis say that even if God would have taken the people of Israel out of Egypt just to avoid such a type of abomination, this alone would be worth it, because people who are involved in that primitive kind, those primitive kinds of practices remain rooted. All their energies remain rooted in those type of practices, and they actually never live on the level of the human mind, where they never use the Tzelem Elokim, the divine part of man, because this preoccupies all their activities. And That's another aspect of kashrus. I wanted to bring that to your attention. Now, therefore, there are several headings here. And as I said, you know, before, you know, the whole Torah is a removal from idolatry. And you see here, idolatry cuts through with different forms, like even eating things that are disgusting or despicable. That's another kind of form of idolatry which the Torah uprooted through these laws. The next thing I wanted to mention was that the fact that in you see, why do you have it twice in the Torah? That's a question that one must ask. It's already given in Leviticus. Why did Moses have to repeat it in Deuteronomy? And the answer is because when Moses repeated what Moses did in Deuteronomy, as I said to you, Deuteronomy is really different because Deuteronomy is the words of Moses himself giving, acting as a prophet, giving exhortation to the people. But when Moses did that, what he did was he reviewed certain things which were really basics of the Torah. And the idea of Torah is that just giving rebuke without study and without knowledge is really not of great value. Rebuke has to have knowledge in it also. That's why in Deuteronomy, there's woven these various laws, because while leading them exhortation, he was also studying with them. And that's an important principle of Torah, that Torah does not believe in just giving people, you know, exhorting them and rebuking them. What you're supposed to do is teach them. So even though Moses did say things to them where he pointed out their flaws and their shortcomings, he taught them as well. And he repeated certain things which were extremely important. For instance, the Ten Commandments he repeated, and he also repeated the laws of kashrus, because the laws of kashrus, as I said, are basic in terms of the nation. There are two basic areas where a person must always have a supremacy of the intellect, and that is when it comes to the appetitive, what you wish to eat, and when it comes to the sexual. Now, the question, of course, that you would ask is, if that's the case, why didn't he repeat the restrictions in Leviticus, the sexual restrictions as well? Which is a very good question, since those are so important. I believe the answer is that he did really, because he does mention, if you take a look in, it's in Deuteronomy 22, where, so here's a thing. Yes, 22, and that's 22:13, where he goes.
Rabbi, we got 60 seconds.
60 seconds. Okay, so he mentions the school prohibitions with regard to living with another person's wife, and with regard to the laws with regard to divorce. And the reason is because in the original laws, the prohibitions were on incest. And once that's accepted, incest it becomes a law. The person, that's it. You know, the person, normal person, doesn't have his desires going in that area anymore. But then the desires go into the promiscuous, and that's why Moses in Deuteronomy dealt with the laws of promiscuity. So he kept those two chapters were repeated in Deuteronomy: the kashrus and also the sexual restrictions. Okay, I guess that's it.
Okay, we'll pick.